introduction. So I'm going to propose a method that is in a way suboptimal for distributing reference frame or directions, but I think which is much more practical than any other method that has been proposed so far. So I'm going to start by actually introducing the whole problem. So this is a risk I'm taking because I might bore half of the audience, please. So bear with me. So this is the introduction of the problem. We have two observers, okay, Alice and Paul. And Alice wants, let's start with a simpler problem where Alice just wants to indicate one direction of Paul. Okay? The problem is that they don't share a reference frame, and thus they can't transmit this information by a finite number of bits or anything of that sort. So it has to be sent to some classical object, okay? Either a quantum mechanical object like a spin or a hydrogen atom or a classical object to be a gyroscope. So in order to quantify this problem, we'll play kind of a quantum game in which Alice first picks a direction, okay, n sub a, precursor quantum states and sends it to Bohr. For example, you can think about Alice preparing an angular momentum eigenstate with the highest eigenvalue in this direction. Okay, that's just an example. Bohr does any measurement on the state and has to guess his best guess for this direction n sub b, and for this run give him a score which is just the cosine square of the angle between the true direction and the guess direction divided by 2. Okay, so our goal is to maximize the average of this fidelity function over infinite number of runs. So let's just start with the simplest example, which most of the people here already know. So Alice, suppose, has two spins. So what would be better if the two spins are parallel or anti-parallel? Well, the answer is well known. It was shown by Duzen and Popescu. And for parallel, anti-parallel spins, the average fidelity is a little higher than the parallel spin case. And intuitively speaking, we can see that because the anti-parallel spin state has more lives in the higher ignore representations of the rotation, both in the J equals 0 and J equals 1 representation. But that's just an intuitive argument. So the same game can be played for aligning a Cartesian frame. So we're talking about aligning three axes of the frame. And Bob wants to find the rotation that brings his Cartesian frame to the Cartesian frame of Alice. The rules will be the same, so Alice prepares some state, sends it to Bob, so on. But this time, we just define our fidelity function as the average over all the errors for each one of the angles. Okay, now let's say something about Bob's measurement. So Bob's measurement, we represented by a POVM. Now, we can take this POVM to have a discrete number of projectors, or we can take it to be some kind of a continuous POVM, an infinite number of detectors. The results are the same, it's just easier to carry out the integrations than carry out large sums. So the infinite projectors are these, which I know by three angles, psi, theta, and phi, which represent the three older angles that bring the Cartesian frame of Bob to the Cartesian frame of Alice. Okay? And these projectors have to look in this particular form. We try to find some initial vector B. It's not a state, it's not being normalized. It's normalized in a way that it would satisfy Schur's lemma. And you see that in each one of the judicial representations, the coefficients are normalized to 1, and the projection of psi, theta, and phi are just rotations of this fiducial vector. And as I said, by Schur's lemma, this construction gives us a resolution of identity of this sort. Okay, so this is Bob's POVM. And Now, what do we want Alice to do? We want Alice to, in this case, we want Alice to prepare a hydrogen atom in the nth energy level. So I'm going to talk only about this case, forgetting about spins or anything else. There's a subtle difference between using spins and using a hydrogen atom, which I'll mention later. And we want to find some kind of a feasible atomic state which will minimize the transmission error, and the feasible, I mean that people maybe know how to produce it experimentally. And again, Alice signal is a very general signal written in the L and M basis. And now, a word of caution should be in place, because the vector A and the vector B are written in different notations, because Alice and Bob do not share a common reference frame. So it would not be right to carry out calculations, not keeping in mind that these two vectors are written in different, for example, with respect to a different z-axis. In order to do any calculation, we can define Euler angles, alpha, beta, and gamma, that rotate both Cartesian frames into Alice's frame, and then rotate back by the true angle from Alice to Bob's frame. Okay, and these three angles indicate the error in the guess, the measurement in the guess made by Bob, and the probability of error is just vectors A and B centered between the rotation by alpha, beta, and gamma. So in this way, you can carry out calculations even though A and B are written in different notations. Okay, so optimality was done by different groups. And it was shown that for one direction, the optimal state would include a sum over all representations J with n always x equal to 0. And the fidelity would go to 1 as 1 over n squared, where n is the principal quantum number of the energy eigenstate. And for a reference frame, the optimal state will be, again, sum over all irreducible representations, but this time the n value being equal to j. And in this case, the fidelity goes to 1, as 1 over n, and both coefficients always are related, are the same as Alice's coefficient, but with the correct normalization. So this is the optimal method to transmit either one direction or a reference frame. Okay, so now I want to start talking about the elliptic states and how it can be used for this problem. So first, very short divergence into classical mechanics. I want to remind you, those who forgot or haven't taught classical mechanics for a long time, that a classical Keplerian orbit has two constant, two integrals of motion. One of them is two vectorial integrals of motion. One of them is the angular momentum, and one of them is the Laplace-Runge-Lenz vector. And they are orthogonal. The Laplace-Runge-Lenz vector here, denoted by k, points in the direction of the major axis of the ellipse, which is traced by the orbit of the particle. And the angular momentum is perpendicular to the plane of the ellipse. Okay, so what would we want, how would we define all the quantum elliptic state? This would be a total state with these properties. First, I want it to be eigenstate of the Hamiltonian. Okay? Second, I want the probability distribution to be localized in some classical elliptic trajectory. So this would be some elliptical torus, which is maximal, which traces the classical orbit of a particle and the Coulomb potential. And I also want minimal fluctuations of both L and K, of both the angular momentum vector and the Laplace-Runge-Lenz vector. So I want minimal delta L squared plus delta K squared. Okay, so how do we actually construct this space? Not experimentally, but mathematically. So first we look at the definition of the Laplace-Runge-Lenz operator. The momentum P is the linear momentum, H is the Hamiltonian. And if you look at the commutation relations of L and K, we see that these are the commutation relations of the SO4 rotation group. OK? Okay, so an answer for rotation group would have 6 generators. Okay, L and K are the generators. So the next thing, okay, also these operators are orthogonal in the sense that if I take expectation value of L dot K or K dot L, of any eigenstate of the Hamiltonian, this gives 0. And for any energy eigenstate, L squared plus K squared is just a constant, L squared minus 1. So now we do the trick that is very regular in the Poincaré group, which is that we find new generators, J1 and J2. One of them is BL minus K, and one of them is BL plus K. And these two, first of all, all the components of J1 and J2 commute. Okay? And the J1 and J2 are two independent three-dimensional angular momentum operators. So we have decomposed the representation of SO4 into a product of two representations of SO3. And for energy eigenstate, the value of J1 squared and J2 squared is always equal to n squared minus 1 divided by 4. Okay, so now I want to also remind you that I'll use the notation of J, comma U, to denote a coherent state of the regular three-dimensional angular momentum coherent states. Okay, so this, the obey that U dot J acting on the state gives maximal eigenvalue J. What's important to remember is the states have the minimal dispersion of angular momentum. It's equal to the square root of J. And we can obtain them just by a rotation of some fiducial vector. And now the quantum elliptic state would be just to take the cross product of two of these three-dimensional coherence that in each one of the subspaces. So we want first in the J1 subspace and the second in the J2 subspace. And U1 and U2 could be any unit vectors, but what is important to assume is the angle between U1 and U2, and their addition and their subtraction. Okay, so if you remember all the formulas I showed you before, we can see that the dispersion of L squared plus K squared for any state defined in this way is minimal and is equal to 2 times n minus 1. So just because of the dispersion of delta J1 and delta J2 for any three-dimensional coherent state. And now, let's see what is the corresponding classical orbit to this state that I've just defined. So let's define 3 unit vectors. This will be orthogonal unit vectors. One of them would be the sum of U1 and U2 of the normalization. The other one would be the subtraction of U1 and U2 normalized. And the other one would be just the cross product. And let's look at the expectation values of the components of K and L along this direction, K, L, and W. So K, L, and W define three orthogonal axes. Let's look at the expectation values of K and L. Okay, so here my notations are the following. K sub K means K in the direction of K, unit vector K. So, if we calculate the expectation value of K sub K, we get it is n minus 1 sine of some parameters theta. This theta is half the angle between U1 and U2. The same goes for similar thing goes for L sub L, which is n minus 1 cosine of this half the angle between U1 and U2. And in all the rest directions, the expectation value vanishes. Okay? So if we think about it for a second, we can claim that the coherent state n is a principal quantum number n, and unit vectors u1 and u2 corresponds to a classical orbit in the kw plane, with a major axis in the k direction, angular momentum in the l direction, and eccentricity which is equal to sine of this angle theta. So let's look at some pictures. So this is like a regular circular state. Just the circular state has just the maximum m value for the given n and l. Okay, so take some n, it had maximum n and maximum m, and it's just like a maximum on some elliptical and completely circular torus. Okay, so this is the direction of the vector L. The direction of the vector K is not defined, so, because it's completely symmetric. But this is some generic elliptic state with eccentricity equal to 0.7. And in this case, the direction of the vector K points into the major axis of this torus, and L is perpendicular to the plane of the torus. The reason for it being sort of an asymmetric with respect to the probability density is we can give some classic arguments. So here I cut this elliptic state in half and look at the probability distribution. And the bigger peak corresponds to what is called the aphelion. This is like the farthest place from the center, from the focus of the orbit. Okay, and classically you say that the particle spends there most of the time, I mean a longer time, because its velocity is small. So this is just a classical argument for seeing why this peak should be larger. That the perihelion, the particle will spend least amount of time. And this is what is called the extreme start state. So this state is actually the eigenstate of the Hamiltonian if we add some static elliptic field and say here at the x direction. So here this is the direction of the vector k. It has eccentricity equal to 1. And it is completely symmetric around the direction of the vector k. You see that in a way it's really pointing in some direction. Which is the direction of k. So we're going to try to use this state to indicate a direction and see how it goes. Okay, so let's see how it goes. So let's start with the transmission of one direction. So again, we want to calculate the expectation value of cosine of omega sub z. So this will be the, Alice always picks her z axis, of course, and this is the direction we want to indicate. And we want to see how does Bob's error look like? So the error on the z-axis is just the order angle beta, okay, the principal order angle beta. And let's just compare the two most logical cases. Take the circular state, which is just a surface question method, actually, or the extreme Stark state. Okay, this in the SO3 cross SO3 representation, this state looks like J and minus J cross J and J. This is the result, and we can see that asymptotically, the extreme start state is better than the Mansart-Pascal method, but asymptotically, it's way behind the optimal method. Okay, so the optimal method goes to zero, the infidelity, the mean square error goes to zero, is 1 over n squared, where the extreme start state and the circular state would go as 1 over n. So now let's think about, I'm not described yet, so I'm trying to do Cartesian frame. I can do a Cartesian frame by just looking at two directions and taking the first product. Okay? So let us think like, what eccentricity would we choose in order to maximize our fidelity, to minimize our error. So what we really want is an eccentricity which gives the fluctuations of k in the orthogonal directions to its main direction over its expectation value will give around equal to the fluctuations of L in its orthogonal directions over the expectation value in its main direction. And the reason would be that we want equal errors on both the axes that we indicate with the k and the L. Okay? If we just do a simple calculation, we see that this is obtained for eccentricity that is 1 over the square root of 2. Okay? And again, we can calculate the cosine of omega, the average of cosine of omega x plus cosine of omega y, just given by some function of the other angles. This is the plot of the mean error, square error versus the eccentricity for a few values of n, and we see that our hypothesis was correct. It's not completely accurate, but it's it's in the right direction, the minimum of the error is always around one over square root of 2. Okay? Another interesting thing you can notice that the slope of this curve gets flatter and flatter. If you go to higher end, it's really like some square wave. Okay, and the reason would be that, I mean, just another completely classical and intuitive argument, we want to discard it completely, that as you go to higher end, this elliptic state becomes more and more classical. For a classical state, I wouldn't care what is the eccentricity. Everything is exact. Okay, but still, it's a very limited warranty on this remark. And so this is the comparison with the optimal transmission, okay? And we see that actually asymptotically, the elliptic state and the optimal state gives actually the same results. Okay? So here we really need to look about this elliptic state, but using them we don't lose anything. And what I want to conclude with is some slides I added last night. What is the experimental situation regarding this elliptic space? And what can be done? What sort of games experiments has been playing with? So first, this elliptic state can absolutely be produced in the laboratory by exciting atoms in an external orthogonal electric and magnetic field. So what is actually done is first, these guys excite this state in an area that has a strong static electric field. And then these atoms drift into an area which has also a magnetic field, and the ratio between the magnetic field and the electric field just defines the eccentricity of this ellipse. Okay, so this is the good news. Now for the bad news. It's not so bad. I've been cheating all along, actually. I've completely neglected the spin of the electron and any relativistic effects. So what happens if I really take this into account? So once I take this into account, the degeneracy of the energy spectrum is completely lit. So you would expect that a complete 4 happens to this state after a very short time. But what actually happens is a little more elegant. So this ellipse starts rotating, actually rotating around the direction of the angular momentum. We can calculate what would be the precession time. So this is the regular expression for quantum mechanics 1. You have got it in the last year or something. For the energy, if you take into account spin orbit and the first relativistic correction to the Hamiltonian. And of course, it depends now on J. And the precession time would be the time in which almost all the phases acquired by the different coefficients are equal to 2 pi. It's just given by this expression. You see that it depends on the average, on this average angular momentum, which is n minus 1 cosine of this angle theta. And there are also revival times with respect. So the first revival time happens at 1 t per session. And there are many revival times, of course. There is also, at some stages, spontaneous decay of the whole state. But if we, for example, take a hydrogen atom, or anything that looks like a hydrogen atom, with the effective Z is around equal to 1, this precession time is around 10 point, I mean, it's around a millisecond. So this is actually very close to eternity for atomic physics. So the news is not so bad. The spontaneous decay is even longer, so games like this could be played with these kind of states, okay? So now I want to show you what kind of games. I mean, people have been playing similar games to what I'm offering here with these states. And this is just an example. Okay, so I'm not an experimentalist, so don't clap here. this is the experiment they've done. They've excited. Let's look at this graph, the bottom graph here. What these people have done, they've excited the extreme start state, okay, the state with the, like the pointing state in some direction. And they've excited this state, and then they look at they applied a very, very short pulse. So this pulse that is half an optical cycle, okay? on a beam containing atoms excited to this star state, and they looked at the probability of ionization, given that they've done this pulse, given this half cycle pulse. And in this case, the electric field of the pulse was aligned with the direction of the star state. So if the star state was pointing, so to speak, at the z axis, the electric field was also in the direction of the z axis. Okay? And this is the opposite case. The electric field was pointing away from the direction pointed by the star state. So you see that here is the magnitude of the pulse. Okay? So you see that for some range parameters, you can have a very big difference between the ionization probability if the field is aligned or anti-aligned with respect to the star state. Okay, the upper graph is the same game, but with a different star state. There is a whole manifold of star states, which are just the eigenstate of the star problem. Okay. And here what they've done is they've subtracted the aligned case from the anti-aligned case for the different angles between the direction of the star state and the direction of the electric field. And you can see that there is, if they're aligned, there is a big difference, and if they're anti-aligned, there is no difference. If they're perpendicular, so if they're underlined, there is also a big difference. But if they're perpendicular, there is actually no difference. So I'm not at all saying that this is the realization of the PDOBM that I was offering at the beginning part of the talk, but this would be something in the right direction. Okay? There's other games that have been played, but none of them come close to doing anything that's close to what we're talking about. So this is my summary. So we've seen that the transmission of one direction, the Laplace Fermilens vector, is actually better than the angular momentum vector, but asymptotically it's less, it's suboptimal with respect to the optimal states. But they're actually optimal for sending a reference frame. And the most important thing is that they are practical. Thanks.
Any questions? John?
When you cast in the reference frame classically, as we all so often do, with the gyroscopes or the tabletops and what have you, what would that correspond to in this language and how appreciative are they out?
I would say that it's very. You're asking if the classical quantum is better than classical or vice versa, and it would be very hard to beat any classical gyroscope with methods if you're. That's what you're asking.
Well, I mean, if you do the corresponding quantum method with Avogadro's number of quantum states, you compare it to the classical gyroscope, then it would likely be better. But the question is, how much and what you work with. Or, in other words, is the classical world doing the most efficient thing anywhere?
I don't know, because...
What does this mean by being big?
I haven't thought about that. But, that's a good point.
Is anyone got an easy
question? Yeah.
I just wanted to know whether you have an intuition why delta k over k has to be equal to delta l over l. You said that this is the optimal.
Yeah, because you don't want a higher error on your axis that is indicated by the k vector to be bigger or smaller than. You want actual, this is my argument, you want actual equal errors for both the. K for the direction indicated by K and for L. For example, if you take the eccentricity to be equal to zero, there is no preferred L direction. The error is one. If you take a circular state, there is no preferred K direction there. So on that axis, the error is equal to one. So you sort of want the same errors. It's not an exact argument because the result also is not exact. Okay, it doesn't give you one of the sorts of two, but something very close to it.
Okay, the experiments you showed us based on the electric field being either aligned or anti-aligned.
Yeah.
How close is that to the off beam? Is there some way of quantifying
how close that
to the off beam?
I mean,
optimum using these elliptic reverse states. So if you did the optimal QEM on the elliptic,
I mean, you see that. I mean, the it's not even it's not even a PVM measurement, right? Because there is a non first there is a non-zero chance that you would get the ionized even if it is anti-aligned. So even if you try to like look at it as like a projection on the state being in the z direction, a projection on the state being in the minus z direction. Right? Then you get the non-zero overlap between this projector and the plus state. So it's very important, you know, being even close. Even in the case even worse when you start looking at the different angles, they just align different anti-aligned because the post doesn't have a constant electric field because the post has a half cycle post. The electric field also changes. Because it's a half cycle, the more or less the electric field is in. It's always the positive direction, the negative direction. If you try to start tweaking with the angles, then you lose this temperature difference between the aligned and anti-aligned.
It might be interesting to look at theoretically the case where all you want to do is go by the sum of the line or anti-aligned.
Yeah.
Find the fidelity of the optimal scheme. Mm-hmm. Happens
to this scheme. I'll guess this is a very far problem because you see that the difference here is never one. But I mean, maybe we can see what happens if we change the parameters. Okay? Because they're used, but they can. There is a trade-off between using the duration of the pulse and the Kepler period, the classical Kepler period of the orbit, has to be around the same. So they can achieve like 500 femtosecond for duration of pulse. So this is around the direction of the Kepler orbit. If they go to a shorter pulse, make it better.
Do you have an idea what sort of experiments could actually really
the optimum? I mean, it has to be something sort of this. I mean, you have to look at the multiple moments of the data. So here you're looking at the dipole moments. You have to maybe do it with higher moments. But something to think
of. So this is more a question about the states you're using than they're used as a direction indicator. So these elliptical Rydberg states, are they're steady state, like energy eigenstates, they don't evolve?
They don't evolve if you don't take into account the spin orbit coupling or the relativistic correction to the Hamiltonian.
So,
they're eigenstates.
So if I was thinking of a classical state, I would expect something maybe that orbits along that path. So
yeah. Also, for a classical state, you have a precession, right? If you introduce the relativity, the special relativity.
Yeah, but not just precession. I mean, like something that actually, evolves
around. Oh,
that
can actually be done. You can write, but then it's not an eigenstate of the Hamiltonian.
Right.
So you can actually write a state which gives you a wave packet, which is traveling along this. So you can have some wave packet traveling here. Of course, it starts to disperse after a few rounds. But people have done that, and they've actually been able to measure in some approximate way the location of this wave packet with respect to time. So they can actually measure it moving along the path.
So is there any sort of classical limit in which you get something that actually just doesn't disperse and just
yes, if you go to n equals to infinity, that would be the dispersion time would be very, very long. Because the wave packet disperses and then you have revival time. But I guess that if you go to very high end, the dispersion time is very, very long. So
such as
well.
What are your units of distance?
Oh, this is okay. Good. Sorry. So this is just Bohr radii. So this is a huge state, okay? So this is like 4,000 Bohr radii, 2,000 Bohr radii to make the diameter. The radius of the state goes like n squared, okay? And this kind of huge states have been absolutely done at the left. N equals to 50.
So I wonder if this might also be a practical way of doing certain kinds of class organization.
Yeah.
So if you use your relativistic effect, then it would be interesting to look at what is the optimal state for actually encoding timing.
I thought of it, but I have only been given enough time for it.
And perhaps I can miss something in there. I don't know if it's a correct question, man. But so you say you don't use the eigenstates of the free Hamiltonian for the hydrogen atom, but the eigenstates of the Hamiltonian with an electrical field.
No.
Is it true?
No. The electric states are, if you throw away the terms of the relativistic effects, are eigenstates of the Hamiltonian.
Or the free Hamiltonian.
The free Hamiltonian. What I said is that
you can
this state is, this state is, for example, one of the eigenstates, the star problem.
Oh,
is the lowest energy star state.
So it is independent of the electrical field.
The method to produce it would be you need electrical field.
But only to produce it.
Okay. Then you can turn it off.
So you don't need the classical direction?
No, you don't. Otherwise, the whole
experiment,
the whole problem is to... So you can turn off. In principle, some of the experiment... I mean, I've seen in this experiment that I've shown, they actually didn't turn the electric field off, but I think they just didn't think of the problem. Because I saw another group that did a similar thing, and they did turn the field off once they did the measurement.
Well, let's thank Nate again. Can you stop? And we can be.